in the mobile home park space, you're not renting, you're selling homes. So at the end of the day, with our model, we like to own the community and not the homes. We need to be able to have strong buyers that can buy the homes and then pay us the monthly lot rent. And we compete against single family home prices for that.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Coming up on today's show, I've got Brett Bowman of Suncrest Capital. He's a chief investment officer. In just 2 years' time, he went from buying his first mobile home park to now having over 600 pads. They've acquired over $50 million in assets. And he talks about the current state of the market, a big giant project they have under contract just coming up on closing, what they're seeing in interest rates, and why they paused acquiring new properties right now. It's coming up on today's episode of Real Grit. Brett Bowman coming right up. So I got Brett Bowman here. Brett, how are you?
Doing great, thanks.
I'm excited that you're on here. I appreciate you taking the time. Say, we all start someplace. Just take me back to the beginning. What was your first entry point into real estate?
You know, I'd say it goes back several years. Initially, I got interested in real estate, like other people, reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cashflow Quadrant, learning all about like why real estate makes a ton of sense. And my first investment as an investor, not just as a home buyer, was probably 6-7 years ago, bought a single family home. We lived in it, but the whole intention was to rehab and flip it. So that's what we ended up doing. Actually, in the middle of selling that first rental right now, which is exciting. From there, I continued to do some of the single family homes and was kind of building the like a fourplex and apartment complex when I started learning about real estate syndication. And I started dabbling as an investor in some syndications. And that's how I realized, hey, this is a really great way to passively invest, which is really what I wanted to be doing in real estate anyway. And I get some great returns while diversifying what I'm investing in. And after doing that a little bit as an investor, I started stepping into some GP mentorship roles where I was asking for help and learning, and I would take on some roles. And I have a corporate finance background, so I was able to learn underwriting pretty quickly and acquisitions. So had a few really great mentors that got me started that way. And just kind of catching into where I'm at now, 2-3 years ago, met neighbor. We live in kind of the same neighborhood here. Ryan Hill and I started Suncrest. We bought our first mobile home community, just the two of us and a third partner buying it. And the next year we decided to syndicate a portfolio and buy it. Kind of the rest is history at this point. We've got 600 under management, about 500 more closing this next month. Really excited about where we're headed.
Take me to your first mobile home park. What year was that you bought the first one with Ryan?
That was in 2020. So Ryan had bought one himself and his wife in 2019, and then we bought one about a year later. We've had it just over 2 years now. It was a small one, 25 lots in it, Kansas City area. I'd done some multifamily in Kansas City, so I kind of already knew the metro a little bit. So it was a good way to get my feet wet.
So what did you learn? You bought 25 pads there. What did you learn going into that after closing?
The biggest learning for me is I continue to see this with the mobile home park space. And I'm sure this is accurate in every real estate class at some point, but you see a lot of mom and pop owners that just do not have financials and they don't want to create financials. Yeah. They don't have them. You know, you might get lucky and see on their tax returns, be able to kind of decipher, but that can make it challenging to get good bank financing.
Correct.
So fortunately, in this case, we were able to get some financing from a bank and then they hold a small second mortgage for us. And so between that, we didn't have to pull a lot in. But what was crazy for me is just a few months down the road of us keeping track of the bookkeeping, it made it obvious we got a really good deal on this park because NOI was a lot stronger than we thought it was before. It was cash flowing a lot better. So finding some of those deals where don't maybe have the best records, if you can get them financed, they're pretty fantastic, or they can be at least.
Top two or three things a buyer, a mobile home park buyer, needs to be looking for when they're entering into a deal. What's that look like?
Two or three things. I would say the biggest thing is the market. Location, location, and location, right? So from a market perspective, what we look for is we want to be in metro that has at least 100,000 people in it. We also want to make sure that single family home prices are at least 100,000 median purchase price, and then median income is $50,000. The reason we look for all those things is that in the mobile home park space, you're not renting, you're selling home. So at the end of the day, with our model, we like to own the community and not the homes. So we need to be able to have strong buyers that can buy the homes and then just pay us the monthly lot rent. And we compete against single family home prices for that. So making sure that the median single family home price is above 100,000 really helps a lot. Market size is another one. We personally don't love smaller parks, even though, you know, the first one was small. Small ones can be great. And I think they're a really good way to get started when you're new, but you find out pretty quickly that it's just as easy to buy a large one Yep. and manage it as a large one than a small one is. So I think the size is a big thing. And then the third one that really I feel like is pretty unique to mobile home parks is the utilities and the infrastructure. Generally, when you're buying multifamily, you don't really have to wonder, is there a lagoon that this is on? Is it septic? You pretty much always know it's going to be public utilities, obviously depending on size. But with a mobile home park, you've got to pretty quickly understand, well, if it's private utilities, how comfortable am I with managing private utilities? And I can go down the road of that too, but
yeah,
the public versus private, the big difference.
Yeah, the two big ones you're looking at are water and sewer. So you've got to be mindful. We don't need to go too deep in that, but you got to be mindful of that and account for it on the way in. And then there's some process of procedures from due diligence standpoint about what you need to do in order to clearly understand what it is you're buying.
Totally.
Bring me back to management. You know, the management's a piece that I get from a lot of people giving consideration to going into mobile home parks is, I don't know how to manage. I don't know if I want to manage. I don't know who to put in place to manage it. Maybe just to debunk some of that theory, some of that thoughts, or maybe make it worse for them and get them out of this asset class before they ever get into it.
Honestly, it can be challenging.
Yeah.
So far, what our structure has been is when we buy a mobile home community, if there's a manager in place already, fast as we can, we interview the manager. Sometimes the sellers aren't comfortable with that, or you need to make kind of some side agreement on how to start getting another manager. And if we feel like they're relatively competent and can do it, we'll generally keep them on for at least a trial period. But what we've also done is we've centralized a lot of the management functions. So anything like collections or bookkeeping or e-pay, like all those kinds of things are centralized for us. So it's out of the manager's hand. And generally in a mobile home park, we're having somebody that lives on site. So they're already a resident and they're part-time. They're just working part-time to essentially what they'll do is kind of help enforce rules. They do some project management, like a contractor or home or something that they need to supervise. They'll do some of that. And then they may do some like lawn mowing, some relatively basic stuff.
Yep.
But all the other things are for the most part centralized. So it takes a little bit of the risk out of the management for us. And then we've also found a lot of success in having a tiered structure where we have someone that's within a couple of hours is a supervisor that can be there if there's an emergency or if somebody we need to be closer on.
You said you want to own the park, not the homes, which I can appreciate. On due diligence, you know, what I've seen a lot of, you see this a lot in the open market, primarily through brokers, is that, you know, they want to price these things up, take them to market and sell these things like somehow it's an apartment complex. They're almost all park-owned homes and they have their underwriting that's leasing these park-owned homes and dropping it down, the income down that is to an NOI, and then hitting with a cap rate almost looks like an apartment deal. And you're like, but I don't want to own those park-owned homes. So let's say there's a handful of park-owned homes. How do you account for those? Not buy it at apartment valuation, but buy it for what it really is, which is, you know, you wanting to get to a park a lot, you know, just get the house, the home, the mobile home off your balance sheet.
For sure. Yeah. So in a mobile home park, there are several lines of income. So you have lot rent. You might have storage. Sometimes they have storage units. You might have rent, which is like they are living in a home, you own it, they're just renting the home. And that's like your apartment deal. And then you have kind of this last category that's a lease to own structure, which is what you're referring to, where we own the home technically, but we're selling it over time to them. So they're paying us a lot rent. And then every month, they're also basically making a mortgage payment to us. And everything that I mentioned other than lot rent should be below net operating income, to your point, what you're explaining. There might be some other things like, actually, I think storage and some other types of income, like utility bill backs might be operating income. Above, so those are above NOI and that would be capitalized. But any of those other kind of income streams should be below. And honestly, most of the profit and loss statements I see have them above, which out of the gate, you're struggling with the negotiation with these sellers because they think that they're selling it at an 8 cap because they have this up above. But really, when you remove it, it's more like a 5 cap or a 6 cap.
Right.
So that can be challenging, but you really got to make sure that you do that, especially with lease to owns. That's not forever income. It eventually gets paid off. You can't value that as forever.
That you get a mobile home coming back to you, they don't even want to own in the first place.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that's more CapEx to rehab it or something. So it's going to be a net loss for sure on that situation.
Best marketing avenue for you to generate leads and deal flow is what?
So we have a few different avenues. Obviously, we've got as many brokers as we can. We're on their lists and we check all the deals. We do some CREXI rules so we get notified. I think all of that's really important to make sure you're doing. And then we've also, over the last several months, been establishing kind of a cold calling team and process. Mm-hmm. So we have five different people that just part-time, maybe 5 to 20 hours, depending on the individual, each week they do cold calling for us. And the way we've structured that is we kind of pay them pretty basic hourly rate, and then they get 1% of the purchase price when we close. So they have Incredible. A lot of upside when they
Huge upside.
Exactly. Yeah. We had one close last month that was off market. We have another one closing in November that's off market. We've had a couple others that we found that way that haven't made sense to us. So we've flipped them to other people, but that's been a good process for us so far.
What's the team structure look like for you?
So we have a blend of, I hate using the word corporate when we're a small team, but we have a blend of like central employees as well as more like decentralized contractors. So we have 5 full-time W-2 employees that do anything from operations, marketing, and that marketing person does investor marketing and home sales marketing, like in our parks. We have a property manager, asset manager. The property manager is like our regional director. And then we have a homes coordinator. You wouldn't believe how much effort goes into managing these homes, by the way. Yeah. Kind of a big deal. And then kind of our next tier, every one of our communities has an on-site manager and they're 1099 contractors. We also have a ton of success with virtual assistants. So we have a team of 2 that help us out with our first round underwriting, and then a team of 3 that do a bunch of other stuff for us, like bookkeeping, rent roll updates, bill pay, all that kind of stuff.
Have you been to the vault? RealGritVault.com. Listen, we've got multiple guests who come on and oftentimes they bring us little tips, tricks, tools, scripts, Excel calculators, a multitude of things, and they share it. They share it for you. You can get them totally free, totally free. RealGritVault.com. Never been on the show who's brought everything. It's all behind the vault. Get it. RealGritVault.com. It takes a team to keep this ship moving, doesn't it?
Absolutely does.
What's the culture like on the team?
We're kind of talking about before the call, we use an entrepreneurial operating system from Gino Wickman's Traction book, and that's really driving our culture quite a bit. So essentially, we talk a lot about top issues, top goals for the quarter, how are we tracking, and we do a good job of holding each other accountable and make sure that we're progressing. I think we also try to have a fair amount of levity in our conversations in our team. So we tease each other a lot. I'm scared of spiders and I can't tell you how many times people try to scare me with spider pictures or something. So we kind of try to keep it low key as well.
Looking back over the last handful of years, I mean, you've had tremendous growth here. What's been the biggest challenge?
In the past, it's been raising capital with investors. So, convincing investors to bet on us. We're a strong investment. We're going to do great. After having a few projects, though, that have gone really well and we've been cash flowing and giving regular updates, showing transparency, it's been easier. Honestly, I remember hearing a year ago, you're going to get to a point where we're going to start pushing away investors because you have too much. And I never believed it. You know, you do get there. You can just demonstrate results and transparency and build relationships. You get there. So that was the hardest. I think at this point, it's the other thing that I would say is probably project management. We constantly have a lot of projects that we're doing because regularly we'll buy projects that have forced depreciation options, whether it's sub-metering utilities or adding more lots or upgrading the sewer infrastructure, moving a septic to city sewer. That all takes a lot of time from our team, and that can be challenging to track.
I think almost in all of those, if not all of those, you got to rely on third parties.
A lot of it, for sure. We do have our project managers in-house, but to your point, you've got contractors and general contractors that are third party.
What's one habit that you possess that you could not live without that attributes largely to your success?
I have probably the one I'll say from a business perspective, at least, is responsiveness. It gets annoying sometimes, but when I see emails come in, I have to respond to them right away. Like I treat my email, my inbox as kind of a to-do list. So if something's sitting there, I have to have it resolved for the most part. So I get a lot of feedback from investors. They appreciate how responsive I am because I really don't like to let people sit.
Thinking back to your childhood, was there something that impacted what you do or how you are today that largely shaped you as the person you are now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Growing up, I grew up in a family of 9 kids. So I was number 5 out of 9 kids. My dad in the early, I was in high school timing, was laid off from a company because the CFO was embezzling or something. And 2-year period, he was in and out of a lot of jobs. At a relatively young age, I started learning insecurities about money. Earlier, I had a history teacher of all teachers teach us about the stock market and how time value of money works. things like that. So I had kind of had this like basic foundation and understanding of time value of money, investing, savings, all those kinds of things. And then I kind of saw like what it's like to be in a massive family of 9 kids, right? My parents were probably struggling and stressing all the time about this kind of stuff. Yeah. So as I've moved into my adulthood, that's been something that I've really wanted to make sure that I am establishing that for myself and my family and my kids and the group set. And we talk a lot. In fact, even in our mission statement, we talk about generational and legacy wealth because we're really big on making sure we're building something for our future generations and not just for now. So I think that's impacted me quite a bit.
As a kid, when you were going through that, what was that emotionally? What did that feel like having seen that and living it?
Well, it's interesting. Initially, I remember feeling almost this animosity, like I was a victim in this situation. And then I think I shifted over to more of an empathy because I could see my parents stressing. I saw my mom work, pull up a couple jobs that she was doing to just keep us going. There were times I was scared. Like I remember feeling fear because we didn't have this assurity, but my parents did a really good job of trying to like hide that from us and help us feel secure. But it's hard to hide that when something's going on for 2 years.
To going through that impact your risk tolerance as an adult when it comes to placing investments?
Not with placing investments. I still have a fairly high risk tolerance when it's my own money, not when I'm pulling in investor money, just to be clear. But I would say I want to always make sure I have enough reserve. So my life insurance is way higher than I should be. My emergency fund's higher than it needs to be. Things like that, just because I want to make sure that if something happens.
There's always a safety net. There's always a plan B is what it sounds like. Well, let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call 4-4 impact.
4-4 impact.
Your favorite quote, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. What about that resonates most with you?
Yeah, I think there's just so many times that people fail to plan, right?
Yeah.
But it's even just making a decision. I think the lack of making a decision is a decision in of itself. I've heard that before too. I don't have the right quote for that. But you know, you're being passive and you're deciding to just not move forward. That's a decision. And with projects that we're doing with these real estate projects, it's not as simple as just buying it and holding it. There's a lot more that goes into it.
Yes.
For example, we have this big acquisition we're closing on here in the next couple of weeks. We are down to the weeks trying to figure out, okay, when are the submeters going to get ordered? When are they going to get installed? Who's installing them? When are we going to notify tenants we've got a submeter coming up? You've got to have that all planned out way in advance because in some cities, you got to give tenants 90-day notices before something happens. So it would really suck to have it all done and then you got to sit for 90 days. So those are the kinds of things is really big to be planning.
What do you think holds most investors back from hitting their personal next level?
I think it's excuses. You know, I don't know if that's a great way to say that, but here's another quote, right? Benjamin Franklin, that I'm sure I'm going to butcher, but something to the effect of he that good at making excuses is rarely good at anything else. I think that's a big thing because you hear people say, oh, well, I don't have time for that. I don't have enough money for that or whatever. And I think if people are just looking for an excuse to not make a decision, like I said before, because there's really ways to get into this with no money or little time. Either way, I think you can make it work.
Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
My family. Yeah. I've got 6 kids of my own, so followed in my parents' footsteps a little bit there, including 3 little boys, twin boys, and then a baby that are 3 and under, all 3 of them. So it's a handful around here.
I can only imagine. Jeffert, how much work that is.
The never dull moment, that's for sure.
What's your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
I recently joined a group called F3. It's actually nationwide. We wake up really early, crazy early in the morning, work out, but it's not about working out. It's really about the community and serving the community. So a lot of things that we do is we run fitness workshops with kids. There's a marathon coming up in a couple of weeks. It's really about awareness with veterans and veteran health, things like that, that really are just kind of establishing more of a community awareness.
I'll make this last question. When you look at the balance of this year and into 2023, where are you at and where are you headed? What's in your world?
In 2022, this year, right? We just kind of telling you the trend, right? The portfolio I just mentioned that we're going to be closing on in a couple of weeks. This is just a good case study for where we're at today. In January is when we first stumbled upon this project and the interest rates were in the 3% range. So we made a pretty aggressive offer on this portfolio based on we're already in this market, we know this market, we can scale quickly, and the interest rates are awesome. And then obviously every month after that, we've been seeing these rates come up.
Correct.
And so fortunately, we were able to lock in a solid rate, the 10-year term, all those things. It's certainly higher than 3% where we started. And then we needed to retrade on the seller to get the purchase price down. That was a ton of work to convince him that it's not the same thing that we had in January. Right. But fortunately, we're coming in. It's a good cap rate, great interest rate, good project plan. Like we're looking good there. But truthfully, everything else we're seeing right now is just not making sense. We've got a couple of those small off-market deals that we're still going on, but we've more or less put our acquisitions on hold. And for us, I don't think we'll pick up acquisitions again until maybe Q2 next year when things settle down. And well, mostly, so you said why. I don't expect interest rates to settle down by Q2, but I think sellers will catch up with the interest rates finally by then. I think sellers are starting to realize they can't get what they got in 2021 for their properties.
Let me summarize what I'm hearing. What you're identifying out there in the marketplace is that you, the buyer, one price point and the sellers that are totally different. And what you're seeing and living out is that the gap between those two cannot be closed. And ultimately, that means you've got a rate of return that's got to get hit. You've got to borrow at a certain rate. And so what we're seeing is that buyers are still have 2021 prices in mind when the market has actually moved on them. Is that a fair summarization?
That's exactly it. And I think part of the reason for Q2, there's a couple of things. One, I mean, just full transparency. We have so much closing right now that we want to focus on project. But the other thing is, there's kind of two things that we're going to see a shift in with an acquisitions perspective. One, I think sellers are going to get a little bit more realistic. Banks will catch up to that as well. So we've even had problems with banks not wanting to finance deals at all because they seem to be a little skeptical of what the market's going to do too. I think that'll help. The second thing is, I think we're going to start seeing some defaults come in that will hopefully, I mean, you and I were talking about like retail, industrial space. Yeah. I think we're probably going to see some overextended sellers that are going to need to get out of deals. And that could present some good opportunities.
Soon, if anybody's coming up with a refinance and now staring down a rate that's north of 6%, at the time of this recording, you're at a 3 anything or a 4 anything, the numbers look very different.
I mean, I can only assume most of those people 4 years ago were projecting another 3% refi.
Yeah.
Their projections are going to be very off.
Correct. For people who want to find you, follow you, connect with you, what should they do? Where can they go? How can they do it?
The easiest place is just our website. It's www.suncrestcap.com. So SuncrestCap, for short for capital.com. My email address is just Brett with 2 T's. So Brett@suncrestcap.com. Feel free to reach out to me. The website has my Calendly link. If you want to book time with me as well, probably the best.
No, terrific. We'll put the links and the email address down below in the show notes for anybody who wants to reach out to Brett and connect up there and follow Suncrest Capital and see what they're got going on project-wise and or raising money-wise. I appreciate the time to connect up here. It's fun to hear about your journey and how fast you've accelerated through this over the course of the last 24 plus or minus months. Your current pulse of the marketplace, we are experiencing the same thing you said. We just don't have acquisitions on hold. So it's fun to, given the current state of what you have going on in your business, you guys have hit a pause on that and ultimately saved some dollars and cents relative to, I suspect, some bodies on that side of things. Save some time, energy, effort, and focus on your current projects in the pipeline. Hey, Brett, thanks so much for taking the time to connect up here. It's fun to hear about your journey over the course of the last 2 years and how fast you've accelerated and grown. Capital raising has gotten easier over a period of time. I know there's plenty of investors out there that like to know there's light at the end of the tunnel, especially as they get through their first handful of projects. And what you're experiencing in the current state of the environment, the fact that the gap between the buyer and seller is awfully wide right now and you're living it day in and day out. It's good to know that we're not the only ones, right?
Absolutely.
You know, that's transpiring out there in the environment. So I appreciate the time to connect here, Brett.
Of course, Neil. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
For everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons, reminding you that real estate requires real grit. See you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must-answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode. Hey, it's Neil Timmons. I've got a question for you. Are you a fix and flipper and want to leverage your skills, build passive income, create bigger paydays? Maybe you buy and hold rental houses and you want to increase your income by working less. Maybe you're executing on the Burr methodology and times being what they are, you're finding more cash locked into a deal. Maybe you want more predictable profits. or maybe this is your first go at real estate. Well, I've got a challenge for you. The 20X Profit Challenge. It's hosted and taught by yours truly. I'm going to teach and show you over the course of 5 days in this totally free challenge how to 20X your profit. Lesson one's a game changer, multiplying your income and capital fast. Lesson two is the perfect plan. I'm going to show you how to be getting off market 20X profit deals coming to you. The cash flow multipliers, lesson three, how to rapidly force appreciation and income growth. Lesson four is the deal accelerator, buying and holding profit guarantee properties. And lesson five, the wealth accumulator, consistently closing on 20X profit deals. I'm going to show you exactly my methodology, exactly what I did to go from where I was at, not achieving the results I wanted to achieve in my life, not achieving that passive income that I hoped for, that I knew I was capable of, and in 3.5 years, becoming financially free. I'm going to do that in a 5-day free challenge. To sign up, go to 20xprofitchallenge.com, 20xprofitchallenge.com. We've got one coming up. Go there now, register. It's totally free. 20xprofitchallenge.com, and I'll see you in the challenge.